evening, folks, and a warm welcome back to the Trinity Teams podcast. As usual this evening, I'm joined by my colleagues, Joe McHugh of Video Celts and James Forrest of the Celtic Blog. So it's going to be an interesting show this evening, plenty to talk about. It's fairly packed. One of the main talking points, obviously, is going to be what's going on over the fence, because there's quite a lot going on over the fence. So we're looking forward to chatting about that a little bit later on. But to begin with, we're going to touch on the last two games we played, which was the Dundee United game midweek last week, and also the game against Ross County up at Dingwall. So without further ado, we'll go straight in. Let me go over to James, and we'll get his thoughts on the midweek game, following on then to Dingwall and what he thought of that. All right, James?
Yeah, mate, all good. Dundee United went pretty much as we expected. I think they came to play their pretty much the same game that they played at Tannadice. They've got to put as many men behind the ball as they could and hope that we didn't get a goal. And then we did. And for that moment on, it was a fairly routine game. I thought out of the two games, it was easily the most important one, because it was just about putting more points on the board. Another professional display that showed that we've moved on from Ibrox, and we got the job done. We got the job done, and Ross County was a stroll. I thought we strolled that game. Even though we didn't get a couple of goals till later on, I thought it was an absolute procession. And we've been aided and abetted, of course, by the mess across the road. But that's, as Roger said, none of that is why we are 15 points clear. We are 15 points clear because we've been the most consistent team in the country, and that we just know how to get the job done every single week when it matters. And I was really pleased with the two performances. I was particularly pleased that Kyogo scored a couple of goals, and I had kind of written about that. I had kind of written about this whole idea that a lot of people were worried that the strikers weren't scoring. But as I wrote, and as Rogers himself said today, the system that he plays doesn't depend on the strikers scoring goals. But with the wingers out, we needed the strikers to come up and do their thing, and Kyogo produced, so it was excellent. I was really pleased with the two games, both performances. We deserved to win both of them, and I thought we were comfortable in both of them. There was a little bit of controversy, of course, over the alleged possible red card. Most of that media-inspired nonsense. No one ever asked why the Ross County player wasn't sent off, and there were people even disputing whether that was a penalty. It was preposterous, because that's the most obvious and easy penalty decision you will ever see this season. But yeah, I mean, 6 points, racked up some more goal difference. It was good, yeah. I mean, this is what Celtic do. This is what Celtic have been consistently doing. We just turn up and we get the job done. Sometimes we make it hard for ourselves, but almost always we get the points. And that, as Roger says, is why we are top of the league. That's why we're going to win title 55 this year.
It's nice to hear that number, all right, 55, isn't it?
I'm going to say that number quite a lot, I think.
Yeah, I think we are. Kyogo's body language during the game, some people are commenting on it. Do you think there was anything to be made of that?
I wrote about this tonight. I've actually just posted the piece. There's two TV shows that come to mind, right? And I said this in the article. One is that show that starred Tim Roth called Lie to Me, about the micro expressions expert who works for the police and the intelligence agencies and all that. And his job is to suss just by looking at someone's face whether they're telling the truth or telling a lie, right? Now, in reality, governments and organizations have spent millions upon millions trying to perfect this stuff, and no one's done it yet. So I'm not going to trust some guy sitting in the stand who doesn't know he's watching to actually do it. And the other show that comes to mind is The Traitors, which I absolutely goddamn love. And I never cease to be amazed by how many people get into that table with a round room and level the most baseless accusations against other people based on the most superficial bull. And that's what we're getting a bit like as a support. People looking for things to point the finger at and say, He didn't celebrate properly. Oh, he walked off the pitch wrong. Oh, he's not. Doesn't look happy with his teammates.
Did it maybe strike anybody that he was freezing his ass off?
It's ridiculous. When did we get like this? When did we get as paranoid as this? When did we get as wrapped up in the soap opera? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was just glad that he scored the goals. On the day when the strikers had to turn up, he turned up and done the job. Why is that not enough for people?
He did, and I was impressed with Johnny Kenny as well.
I thought he was excellent. He was energetic.
He was making good movement. You know, he was running around. He was making himself available. He was lucky not to score or unlucky not to score.
Yep.
So I felt he looked sharp anyway. So hopefully
my
that's
only disappointment kind of... in that regard is we didn't also see Daniel getting on.
Yeah.
But
with him being on the bench, it would have been nice to see him come on.
These guys are part of the first team now. These guys are part of the squad now. So
yeah.
The way Rodgers was talking about Kenny, anyway, he's a comer. He'll play a lot, I think, between now and the end of the season. So it'll be a matter of time before he starts scoring goals. And then, of course, you'll get a lunatic brigade in our support who'll be like, oh, he looks like a better player than Ida, who we paid £9 million for.
Of course.
Some people just like drama.
Well, Joe, we'll move over to you. Your thoughts on the midweek and weekend performances?
A few issues quickly from what James said. On Johnny Kenny, at today's media conference, Rodgers hasn't decided whether he's staying on at Celtic. So he's checking him. He's looking at him. I think because in Ireland, they've got they play through the year, it wouldn't count as a third team. So he can play for Celtic and he could go out on loan towards the end of January. So that's a possibility. On the Kyogo one, there is something there. Very, very rarely does Stephen McGowan of the Daily Mail pluck something out of thin air.
Stephen McGowan is wrong all the time. All the time.
Right. Okay.
Stephen McGowan's a legend in his own mind. That's all Stephen McGowan is. He is wrong all the time about this.
Okay, right. I'm not saying he gets everything right, but there's something in it. He did not pluck that out of thin air. That Atlanta are interested, and of all the players in all the world, the MLS website somehow got Kyogo mixed up. So
they admitted they made a mistake.
Yep. How did they come to make that mistake? Why did they
not? Because they signed a Japanese player and they put up the wrong details on the wrong player.
Right. And is there just two?
As I said in the piece, right, intelligence agents are told, right, we do not believe in coincidences. We do not believe in them, but they happen all the time, which means if you think you see a pattern, look into it, because it might be something, but don't disappear down the rabbit hole, because it might be nothing as well.
I'm not in any rabbit hole, but there's two fairly chunky pieces of evidence there. A story from Stephen McGowan and the MLS website making a mistake. So you'd be silly to disregard that. There's something there. Kyogo will be with Celtic for Young Boys of Bern and Aston Villa. MLS season and transfer window. The season starts in April. Transfer window's on a bit. Abada was sold in February last year. So these things can happen. But harking back quickly...
I couldn't wait to go.
Yeah, I know. I'm just pointing out to get transferred so we can get transferred in February. But go back to the D-United game. A few of us were concerned. There was a over-reliance on Nicholas Kuhn, and we saw that to an extent. You'd struggle to get anyone to step into Kuhn's boots, but Yang certainly isn't the person to do that. Again, in today's media conference, Rodgers was full of compliments. He works really hard and he's applying himself and all that. But there wasn't much of an endorsement to what he does. I think somebody came up and said that he's now made 50 Celtic appearances. I would think the majority of them are less than 30 minutes, but he's only got one goal to his name as a Celtic player. So it's quite a drop-off. And that's why I was glad. And again, as Thurte have mentioned today's media conference, but Rodgers has got a style of play, but not a formation. So when we were so short of wingers at the weekend, it's far better to put Kyogo and Adam Ida together than picking one of them and trying a square peg in a round hole, trying to get someone else to play as a winger. And I think, again, it's something that most of us have said should be tried. If Maeda and Kun are on fire, great. But if one of them's injured, or they're needing a wee bit of variety, playing Kyogo and Ida together, it's a cliched classic big man wee guy, but it's a bit more than that. Ida knocked a great chance down for Kyogo midway through the first half, and he sort of snatched at it. But I'm amused by the criticism of Ida. He's not scored much in the last month or two. He's a very important player for us. He's probably only a £5 or £6 million player. Michael Nicholson's negotiating skills sent it up to £9 million.
Absolutely.
He's a very good, he's an effective player. And again, a great test for anyone coming to Celtic. What will it be like at Ross County in January in a frosty pitch? Well, those two forwards were well up for it. They fancied it. They put in the graft. There was no petted lips. They weren't looking unhappy, and he got on with it. So it was two fairly routine wins, and the glut of fixtures. Sky Sports often miss out in Scottish games, but this week they've got games on Tuesday, Wednesday. So we'll get a bigger break for the Kilmarnock game at the weekend, but I don't think we should be playing Dundee on a Tuesday. Us and them should both be playing on Wednesday, and Sky could have picked which one they fancied showing. But we're in decent shape. It's good news that Coon's back in training. He should be playing tomorrow. It'll be interesting if he just replaces Yang and he sticks with the two strikers. I think the two strikers have got more of a case for keeping their place than Yang. And the midfield's bubbling along quite well. McGregor looked more like himself again. And the defence was competent, not called on much. One slip from Trusty early on against Ross County. The D United put us under a bit of pressure early in the second half. It held up pretty well on it. So the team's shaping up well. It's getting reasonably well managed. But equally, I think it was January 15th or 16th that Coon came in. Unfortunately, just been to the dentist. But we could do with getting somebody good coming in. I think the Palma deal to Raya Vallecano is dead. They've been hit with a transfer embargo by FIFA. But the willingness of Celtic to be progressing that, you would like to think, you can never take in for certain Celtic, you'd like to think that they're some way down the road to bringing in a winger. And again, they won't be available for Aston Villa and Young Boys, but there's life beyond those two matches. We need to be planning ahead. We need to be getting players in. We saw the benefit of Coon. If we'd signed Coon in the last week of August, it might have been a bit up and down for him, but we got him in January. He'd pre-season, and he's been our most productive player. So over the piece, there's very little we can pick fault with in the last two matches. Everything's shaping up quite nicely. And Dundee, I think, will be a tough one. But again, we're well capable of it. They've been up and down because you drew with Clermont's mob. Hasn't been there any great shakes. In good shape. You couldn't have asked for much more. It's nice to see a little bit of variety up front. But there is life beyond playing with one striker. So that's my take on the two matches past.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we have to look at it from the perspective of, since Ibrox, we've played three games, we've got 9 points, we've scored 9 goals, you know, and we couldn't really ask for much more than that. And if you look across the city and the difference there and the amount of points that they've dropped in that space of time, you know, it couldn't, those three, that you know, run of three games couldn't have gone any better for us. But touching on what you said earlier on there, Joe, about Johnny Kenny, and that he may be allowed to go out again at the end of January, and that it's more a case of Rodgers eyeing him up now to see what he's like. I don't think he made a bad first impression anyway. I think Rodgers spoke highly of him as well in the performance, and so did a few of the players. So if he was out to make an impression, it appears he made a decent one to begin with. I mean, if he can backed that up with a couple of goals before the end of January. I don't think it would do his chances any harm, you know, of staying at the club. What do you think there?
But the options are he's likely to be fourth choice striker. Either Kyogo and Maeda will play. So his he might get 5 or 6 20 minutes between now and the end of the season. And if there's a Motherwell or Hibs or whoever, I mean, Hibs were keen on him initially when he came from Sligo. If there's somewhere that he could go out and get 12, 15 matches in, it would be a decision to be made whether we hang on to him as fourth choice striker. It depends on the offer that's put to him. If there's an offer where he's likely to be starting SPFL Premiership matches, or even, I would say, League One in England, I wouldn't send him to the Scottish Championship, but he's at a high level. He's scored against, I mean, there's a few duffers in their Conference League, the All Saints and Larne, but he did score against Rapid Vienna. He's got some decent conference goals that are against better teams than they were playing against the SPFL Premiership. So there's a more than decent case for him staying. But if there is a good offer, I think Rodgers is open to that. And he might come back to us in the summer with 15 Scottish matches under his belt rather than 5 or 6 sub appearances at Celtic. So it's all reliant on what offer comes in to take him on loan.
This all assumes, of course, that Stephen McGowan is not correct, in which case he might find himself third choice striker at Celtic.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You never know.
I am absolutely no fan of Stephen McGowan, but if he writes something, I will take note of it. It's not a zoomer. It's not something plucked from left field.
No, I agree.
He's been informed of this.
If we're going to get news on a signing, and if we're going to get news on a player leaving, it will come from one of those guys rather than some internet nerd like me. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, I know that. This is a fact. These guys are in the business. They've got contacts. They know things. Occasionally, they get things right.
We're all aware of what McGowan's contact is.
We absolutely will not do, because we won't be able to defend it. We will not sell Kyogo at the end of the January window unless we brought in someone first. And if we sign a striker in this window, which I do not expect, but if we do, then I can, not only will I believe it, but I'll even see a case for it. If it's someone who fits into Rodgers' style better. And this is what you were talking about with Yang. Yang, for all Yang might be a good player, he does not fit into this team anywhere. There's no place for him in this style that Rodgers plays. As Joe, those stats that you read are pretty horrendous. If he's played 50 games for us and he's only scored one goal, that's bye-bye.
That's very telling anyway.
That's just not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, there's an awful lot of industry there, but there's very little end product. He does an awful lot of running around, and he's kind of like a headless chicken a lot of the time. There's just no end product. You can't fault his energy, and you can't fault his industry, but... You know, he just, to me, watching him there on Thursday coming in for, or sorry, last Wednesday coming in for Yang, he looked like he was making up the numbers. That was the impression that I got, because he wasn't doing much else besides that. So look, guys, yeah, that's pretty much Wednesday and Saturday's games wrapped up and talked about. So. We'll move on to the next segment of the show, and that is the ever-increasing or unfolding crisis across the city, whatever way you want to look at it. And it really did come to a head at the weekend. And I think it came to a head because, strangely enough, they have a chairman now who's telling them the truth, and they really can't handle the truth. So, and I suppose I put up an article this evening in relation to it, and I said that, you know, they're pushing for change. But what they can't seem to understand is that change is happening. Big time change is happening over there, but it's not happening the way they expect it to. So, Joe, what's your take on all of this? What's your view on what's developing?
great comedy value, great content, but it's incredible that a chief executive headhunted from Man United comes in and says, we're going to have a review. It's like politics. You mentioned politics last week. If you don't know what to do, or if it's bad news and you're scared to tell people, just have a review. And I remember Celtic having a review shortly after Ange Postecoglou. Well, there's a managerial review in December 2020 when things were falling apart under Neil Lennon. That review concluded that Neil Lennon was the best man in the world to manage Celtic. And then a month later, Neil Lennon lost at Ross County and Neil Lennon was gone. That was the first review of that year. Shortly after Ange came in, Gordon Strachan came in to do a review. It was going to include recruitment and the academy. And bizarrely, for Gordon Strachan of all people, the women's team. So I'm not sure that we ever saw much from that review. I know the academy has completely bombed. There's nothing coming through. So reviews are when you're scared to admit to things. And if you bring in somebody from Man United, he would have looked, don't know what sort of time scale he was involved in, but I would say he must have been involved for about 6 weeks before he took up the job on December the 16th. So he would have had at least two interviews, then it was announced that he was getting the job, and you'd expect him to be poring over every detail, every minute. So to come up on Saturday to announce that there's going to be a review, but again, it touched on media issues. We don't really know the format of the media conferences that he had at the weekend. Don't know who was asking questions. There didn't seem to... What came out of it just seemed like one long statement about all these great plans they're going to have and how everything's going to be fantastic tomorrow. So it was complete waffle. There was nothing of substance. There's nothing for us to learn from, nothing for us to be fearful of. And they've been doing reviews and this, that, and the next thing. I think it'll be timed. It'll come out close to season ticket renewals. They'll be hoping to get a couple of results then, and there might be a new manager, and they'll hope to do the Bears in to sign up to see Celtic winning title 56. But it's a farce. It's great that there's a few folk in the media are starting to see through Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart was appointed by the people that appointed Phil Clement, the people that appointed Van Bronckhorst, and the people that appointed Mickey Beale. So he's coming from that same area, and generally a chief executive's got some sway. I don't think he's got much sway. He's been put in handcuffs. There's certain parameters. They've got to drive costs down. But for God's sake, don't tell them all. Don't let the world know. I mean, even nonsense like the transfer window, we might get one or two players in. They've been needing a centre-half since before the transfer window opened. And that's got worse. Liam Kelly seems to be their only available goalkeeper just now. There's no mention that of bringing in an experienced backup until Butland recovers. We have no idea the extent of Butland's injury, when he's going to be back. Every area of the team needs strengthened, and all that the chief executive is saying is there'll be one, maybe two coming in. So it's that's almost a vote of no confidence in Clement. And between the lines, it looks as if there's been players getting recommended to them and Clement doesn't fancy them. And possibly the other way around, Clement's suggesting players and he's getting told they can't be, they're out of budget. So it's fun and games as usual. We've got a new character on the scene, Patrick Stewart.
Jean-Luc Picard.
Yep. There was nothing he said that stood up, so we could all sit back and have a good chuckle at it. And basically... Clement's next SPFL match it doesn't take full points from could well be his last, and I would suggest January 26th in United away after they've been to Old Trafford, meeting of two dud clubs, their players will be wholly up for that game at Old Trafford. That'll be the highlight for them. going to Tannadice a couple of days later. Hopefully the United are still winning and they can be put a bit of pressure on. So there is no end in sight. I don't know if it was 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago they said, that's it, the banter years are over. they've barely started. So James looks as if he's waiting in the wings with a few thoughts to share.
Well, I'm sure he is. James.
The banter years are over. The banter years are never going to be over. Well, I think we're still in the early seasons of the banter years. I think there's decades of this to come. I thought that the Patrick Stewart interview was very interesting in a lot of ways. You see, Jackson said this morning that he had said a lot without saying anything. But if you really listen, there's stuff in there that's of value and of interest. For example, you're right, when he talked about the transfer window and he was asked if there would be 3 or 4 signings, and he said, no, there won't be 3 or 4. There will be 1, maybe 2. And the guy who asked him the question asked the next question and said, well, how does Philip Clement feel about that? Is he on board with that? Is he happy with that? And the guy said, and I think I'll get this almost exactly right. He said, maybe he will be, maybe he won't be. He can challenge me, but I will challenge him back. So if that's not a cue to the manager, I don't know what it is. Right. So you're right. In a sense, it's not a great vote of confidence, but it's also a note of realism where he's basically saying that, you know, people pushing crazy suggestions like getting Marcus Rashford on loan, it's a non-starter. We're not doing any of this crazy stuff. This is not a window for that. He said, first, that Cobs won't sell their good players, won't sell good players in January. He said that if you've done a summer rebuild, you shouldn't need another rebuild in January, which he's 100% right about. When he talked about the future in the summer, he would not give any sort of guarantees at all that there will be any money to spend in the summer. But when he talked about the review, that was exactly what I thought he was going to say. Because it's been obvious from the minute that Clement said, Patrick Stewart will tell you about the January window. He'll tell you what we're doing in January. That the news was not going to be exactly brilliant for them. And to a certain extent, you're right, Joe. This is a guy who doesn't want to be the bearer of the bad news. That's it. Nobody at Ibrox wants to do this. Nobody at Ibrox wants to be the person who comes out and says to the fans, this is what we need to do in order to turn this into a company that can at least break even. So, of course, you bring in outside consultants to do that job. You don't want anybody in the club doing it. Because first, if you do it internally, you're going to create a lot of problems, especially if some departments are getting cut and other ones aren't. There's no way to do it internally, right? So you bring in outside consultants and you pay them a whack of money. They produce a report at the end of it, and the report says, these are the areas where we're recommending that you slash the budgets. And then he takes it back to the rest of the club and he says, well, this is what the consultants have said. This is what we need to do. This isn't your fault. These are experts. This is what we've been told. And everybody can live to fight another day. The fans won't like it, but too bad. Because if there's one thing we learned at the weekend, is that the fans don't have any influence in this at all. They can't get their shit together to organise protests or demonstrations. They're not going to overthrow the board. And if you overthrow the board, what then? What then? It's not like when Fergus was agitating to take control of Celtic. But if Fergus had failed, there was a Gerald Weisfeld. And if Gerald Weisfeld hadn't been able to do it, there would have been a Brian Dempsey or someone like that. There aren't queues of people here lining up to invest in this basket case club. So if they see the board out, what then? What happens then? Who takes over? Who runs the club? Who writes the checks to keep on the lights? Because I read a piece, I think it's John McGarry's written one, in the Mail tonight. And he has pointed out that the year before COVID, they lost another £17 million sum. The year of COVID, they lost £23 million, right? And this is a year where everybody in their support thinks they had some big opportunity oh, we've won 55, let's build on it, and Celtic won't see us for dust. Right? And you know what? It didn't exist. The opportunity simply did not exist. On the back of £23 million in losses for that year, where was the money coming from to do this big rebuild they thought was going to happen and take them to the next level? It's nonsense. It's all nonsense.
Sell Morelos for £30 million and Ryan Kent for £40 million. I read it in the
record. I mean, this is part of the problem, though. These fantasy numbers that came out of nowhere when these guys were riding high and they were allegedly the best players in Scotland. I mean, I said at the time, whose interest is being served with this nonsense in the papers? That Morelos has got £30 million offers and Kent's wanted by Leeds and they're going to pay 20 more. Whose interests are served by this? The players themselves are going to walk in to their agents and say, if Leeds want us, if Leeds want me, why am I still here? This club owes me for my loyalty, go in and get me a pay rise, right? That was obvious. And then when the Leeds move doesn't materialise because it never existed in the first place, you've got to explain to the fans why that didn't happen. You can dress it up a wee bit and say, oh, we're determined to hang on to our best players. Everyone knows that's bollocks, right? Everyone knows that. I mean, when it was Celtic and Brighton came in for Matt O'Reilly, it was like £35 million. You can't turn that down. Realistically, even in our financial position, you can't say no to that. The player wants to go. The offer on the table is good. You make 35 times what you paid for the guy. It's all upside, right? If they had anywhere near that kind of offer for Kent, he would have been gone. Morelos would have been gone. Such nonsense. They do this to themselves all the time. They feed their supporters a diet of absolute lies. And then later on, those lies catch up to them. It's madness. Absolutely.
I think, yeah, I think, James, it's probably fair to say, though, that Patrick Stewart on Saturday was testing the water.
Of course he was. Yeah.
You know, he's testing the water to see, he's putting the feelers out to see what the reaction is going to be like. And let's be honest about it. Saturday's, you know, statement from him was feeling, you know, testing the water, and he got a taste of what just barely tipping the iceberg is going to cause among the fan base. But I think you're right when you go back to what you said earlier on. No matter what they do, no matter what they say, no matter what way they act, they're not going to change anything, because they've never changed anything, you know, down through the years. There's an awful lot of piss and wind from the Ibrox support, but there's never really any clout as such, you know. So, and yesterday's demonstration, if you want to call it that, the walkout at, you know, on the 55th minute, that was farcical. It was just a sham. It was just embarrassing. And a fair few of the fans there were embarrassed by it as well. You could see that. But it's, when I read Jackson's article on it today, you know, and he's basically harping on about the fact that, you know, the fans want the board gone, you know, this whole idea that, yeah, sacking the board is going to solve their problem, when, like, how do they not understand that these are the guys that are keeping the lights on? How do they not fathom that without these guys who have such deep pockets, their club would be dead and buried now? Again. So, like, take two would have happened a long time ago. And so, I mean, they want to force change. What's change? What does change look like? And as I said in the article that I wrote today, change is, it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy that somebody like Elon Musk, like they were talking about last week, is going to come in and be a sugar daddy and give them unlimited funds and allow them to lord it over Celtic, because that's all. Like I said today, that only two things matter to them, that fan base: lording it over Celtic and having money. That's all that matters. Money to buy world-class players and lording it over Celtic. And that's all that matters to them. If they don't have that, their whole "we are a people" mantra, it's non-existent. It's pointless. And this is what's killing them at the moment. They can't, because they can't compete with us. And I mean, they need to give up the ghost on that now. They need to realize that they can't compete with us. They have to focus on actually trying to build something sustainable there. And I think that's obviously what the realization is now with Stewart and the guys who have taken over the club. They know that to be sustainable, they have to start cost-cutting. And like it or not, that's the way it's going to go. What do you think, Joe?
They cannot become sustainable. Being sustainable means finishing second to Celtic, and there is no box office for that. They'll rattle and shout all their slogans and all the rest of it, but having sneaked that title in the freakiest of circumstances, that fueled their delusions even more. And equally, beating Celtic a couple of weeks, 10, 12 days ago, again, that fueled their delusions even more. So Charles Green came in and he'd to give them all sorts of stories, world's most successful team, all the rest of it. The truth in being sustainable and being bigger than Hearts and Aberdeen and being able to pip Celtic now and then, maybe to make progress in Europe, has got zero appeal whatsoever. Their one and only purpose is to stop Celtic. Nothing else matters. So anyone trying to push, look, we've got a 5-year plan. What a laugh that would be. That'd go down a treat. You can't tell them we're going to be sustained. Last season's losses was 17.2 million. That's almost £1.5 million a month. Yeah. That's an incredible amount of money. And if they weren't rid of the board, fine. If somebody can pay off Douglas Park and John Bennett about £20 million of loans, I'm sure they'll be gone. They'll be dust. Yep. So,
if they
pay them off and then see what's left over to invest in the team,
yep,
and you get UEFA financial sustainability. So there's cul-de-sac after cul-de-sac. There is no way out unless Celtic present them with something. And I think while Brendan Rodgers is here, that won't happen. So there's lots of bad news to be unburdened to them. But Patrick Stewart has decided it ain't going to be me, and it's not going to be now. So it'll just keep bubbling along.
But it's like if they did sack the board might as well just go to the fans. Here's the keys. We're switching the lights off and we're locking the doors. It's all yours, you know, because they're the ones who are keeping the lights on.
Gary Peace tonight used the same figure as you just used there, Joe. He said 22 million. 22 million current debts, right? But the current debts, as we all know, are the tip of the iceberg. That's how much is owed to these guys if these guys decide to walk away, right? But in order to walk away, these guys would want substantially compensated for the shareholdings as well. And a lot of their debt disappeared into equity confetti, of course. And God alone knows what the actual figure of that is. That's in the tens and tens and tens of millions. Holy hell. That's why their shares are one pence each at the moment, right? There is so much tied up in the share value. And the share value is overinflated nonsense, as we know. No one is going to go in and pay these people that kind of money for those shares. So a lot of them are looking at either writing their debts off completely, including the 22 million. Even if they were to try and sell their shares, they get a fraction of what the face value for them is. But any buyer who comes in there is looking at compensating those people for the shares first and then the debt. And that's 50, 60 million before you even start on the rest of it. It's fantasy land. Absolute fantasy land. They're going to chase away the owners of the club, the people who've kept the lights on through COVID, through the current malaise, and God knows how much money in debt and money written off and taken in worthless shares. There's no way it's going to happen. Those people can stay there as long as they want. And if I was an Ibrox fan, I would want them to stay there as long as they want, because there are no good alternatives, none whatsoever. And they haven't grasped that yet. They haven't grasped the size of the hole they're in or how much trouble they're really in as a club. They're nowhere near grasping that. If these guys walk away tomorrow, they are screwed. Their only two possible futures are second fiddle to Celtic on a fraction of their current spending, or the second death. And that's it. Those are the two options.
About 7 years ago, they had a very, very wealthy British guy, almost a billionaire. And,
yes, they did.
And the lunatics drummed up all their hatred that this Sports Direct deal is the worst deal in the history of worst deals. We must get rid of them, stop all this. They're leading the club dry. But Mike Ashley was keeping them fairly sustainable, but that wasn't good enough for them. So that's a recent example of someone that tried a bit of this sustainability nonsense. It's not popular. It's not wanted. So this is where they are today.
I am so proud. So proud of the role that we all played in that. You know what? I take an inordinate amount of satisfaction in that. And James, I remember writing about James, the time and getting a load of abuse for their fans saying, you're just making that up. But you know what? Mike Ashley was the best thing that ever happened to them. And we played our role in toxifying that relationship to the point where their fans brought it crashing down to embrace a charlatan like Dave King. And I'm really, talk about disinformation, talk about screwing over your enemies. It was beautiful the way we helped that campaign along. And they still don't get it. They still don't get it.
But James, I was just wanted to make a point with you earlier on there. Like, one of the biggest things that I'm just, as we're sitting here talking about this now, we are a Celtic podcast, okay? And we're sitting here telling the truth about what's going on over there. And you won't get a podcast on their club that will tell their fans what we're telling them now. Because they don't want to be the ones to say that either. The fact of the matter is,
there are a handful of them who know this stuff or who grasp the grasp the broad outlines of it, even if they don't want to go into too much detail, right? I mean, I hear that David Edgar has been telling the union brats that they were out of order at the weekend and that they embarrassed themselves and that they shouldn't have done it. But whether he's prepared to take it to the extreme and say Clement needs time and Stuart needs time to get his ideas across and this club needs a 3-4 year period where it's no focused on winning and just on building a proper structure. I don't know that any of them are willing to do that, but I do know that Jackson's piece this morning was petulant, foot stamping. They never told us anything good. Patrick Stuart never gave us any good news. It's not his fucking job to give you good news and bum you up and tell you all the lies. Be like Gavin Newsom going on TV in California and saying, I know the hills are burning and the fire's raging through the city, but you know what? We've got it under control. Everybody stay calm and things will be fine. You know, it's not the guy's job to make you feel good, Keith Wright. But here's the thing. Jackson and the union brats and the foot stamping lunatic fringe will get their way. They will. They'll win. They'll win this. They'll grind this guy down. This guy will eventually do it their way, or he'll try and do it their way. And it will be a disaster again. But there's no way that that club is ever going to change. It's never going to grow up and wise up and get smart. They live in an alternative reality where that stuff is impossible. The media ecosystem, which is already on this guy's back because he told the truth, he doesn't stand a chance of doing any of the things he thinks he's going to do. He's already, his grave's already dug.
Yeah, I think that's, and I suppose that's the point I'm trying to make. They just don't want to listen to the truth. They just don't want to listen to the reality. And the reality is, as you put it earlier on, you know, it's either second death or second fiddle. And that's the only way forward for them if they ever have.
Oops.
The most of the most has gone.
Then there was two.
Then there was two.
I don't know if we cut it here and come back. We'll keep going. I don't know if Eric can rejoin us.
You've been on this story for as long as me, mate.
Sorry,
do you think that this guy's got a chance of pulling any of this off?
Not a chance, no. It's a very good chance Patrick Stuart will be gone within 12 months. Bisgrove lasted 11 months. It'll be an interesting line on his CV. He can present Manchester United and the club from Ibrox on his CV, but there is no, no one's going to come in there. He's a salary. He's an employee. He doesn't have fantastic clout. He doesn't have big money of his own to go and do things. So there is no solution to it. It's kicking the can, as they've done in various issues. And just they've got a great track record of coming up with it to get the season tickets renewed. But you'd imagine they'd need to come up with something pretty spectacular this year. When their letters are going out, Celtic supporters are going to be shouting 55 at every last one of them.
That's a nice idea.
I don't suspect Celtic will be launching their season tickets with watchers going for 56, but that might help them. That might be their only selling point. Invest in us, or Celtic will win 56. So, I was going to say good luck to Patrick. I wish Patrick Stewart every misfortune life can possibly bring him. every misfortune imaginable. Hope half the team go down with internal bleeding or whatever it is before the game with Aberdeen, and I hope Aberdeen stick 4 or 5 past them. But beyond that pettiness, the guy hasn't got a hope in hell of doing the job. If they move to any, if they probably get a CEO job at some English Championship club and maybe try to put in the practice what he'd learned at Man United, and he might have had a chance of success. But no one is going to be able to tell them austerity. And as Eric put it, second fiddle or second death is not an attractive package at all. So it ain't going to happen. It's just up to us. We have got to make sure our club stay on top of things, make sure that hope that Celtic bring in at least two signings of the standard of Ingles, Ida, Bernardo, McCowan and Trusty. That's got to be the level that we keep going at, and our target's got to be to help finish this season successfully and be very, very ready for Champions League qualifiers at the start of next season. We can't be taken by surprise. We don't have Nir Beaton to bring into central defence for next season's Champions League qualifiers. We've got to be ready for it. We're getting up to, he'll mend them. They'll probably have Champions League qualifiers. It's sort of overlooked how grim Dynamo Kiev have been. Dynamo Kiev put them out at the first opportunity, third qualifying round. Kiev then get beat by RB Salzburg. They're doing hee-haw in the Champions League. And I think Kiev are bottom of the Europa League. So that's where they are. When the game is serious, Champions League qualifiers, Champions League money, that's where they are. They've got a fantastic win against Nice. Absolutely incredible. World media reacts. They went away to Malmo. they threw with Spurs. It was a travesty. It should have been a victory, etc., etc. But in the serious matches, they've got one Champions League campaign for them. They're record breakers. Under Clermont, they get beaten quite easily by Dynamo Kiev. And it's hard. You can't put a case for saying that they're better now than they were then, or that next season they'll be better prepared. So sit back and enjoy. I think we went to town in that one, Eric. We could probably go on.
We would have dedicated the whole show.
I like what you said there about Spurs. I find that quite amusing, because I've been reading a lot about that. I've been reading a lot of that in the press in the last couple of days in defence of Philippe Clermont. They held Spurs to a draw at home. Congratulations, you just compared your team to Tamworth. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, Joe, we could really dedicate a whole show to it, but it would take up I'd say longer than 2 hours to actually go full whack at this, you know. So the next segment, which was really what I wanted to look at in terms of January and the transfer window thus far, which has been very quiet. Aside from a small few rumors circulating around the place, there isn't anything concrete thus far other than outgoings. Well, I suppose there was an outgoing supposed to be happening, but that fell through due to FIFA putting the stop on putting a ban. Do we know why FIFA put a ban on Rayo Vallecano?
What's the reasoning? It must be financial sustainability. It's strange. It's FIFA. I thought UEFA would be involved, but for some reason this is FIFA. And you start to think, do they owe some club in South America money or some club in North America? That's my only guess on it. Yeah. I suspect they might be able to appeal against it, but the clock's ticking down. They've got to the end of this month if they want to do a deal on Palma, but it doesn't look very clever on Palma's agent's part that he was that they were negotiating to take him over there. I suspect Celtic weren't particularly bothered where he's going as long as the offer was coming in. But I think it's back to square one for Palma. Square one is probably the MLS, and we'll see where that goes. But there's not much happening Celtic-wise. We presume Tierney is going to sign a pre-contract, and depends on how drama queen Mikel Arteta takes it, whether he comes to Celtic before the end of the month. There should be things going on, and we'll assume that the haste to rubber stamp Palma's departure, even if that's been halted just now, means that they're well in advance for a winger. Roger's been pretty clear when he's been asked about it. He's not talking about defenders, he's not talking about fullbacks. Tierney covers the left back area. Rodgers has said in January you want to bring in goals. So the Norwegian winger that was mentioned, he looks decent. He looks possibly a cut above the standard project signing. He looks of a not quite Arne Engels levels. Engels came from the Bundesliga, but the Norwegian winger looks promising. And if Kyogo's to go, they've got a hard job finding someone in January that's going to be at Kyogo levels. So that's an interesting one. And again, we've still got so much of Matt Lowell's deadwood. Hi, Peter. We've still got so much of Matt Lowell's deadwood to get rid of.
We have.
I was shocked. Was it Stoke City interested in Naroki? I mean, what on earth has somebody seen in Naroki that thinks he's up for the 46-game slog Saturday, Tuesday in the English Championship? That looks a league way too tough for Naroki. He couldn't crack it up here. I think Naroki might have been fit all this season, but we don't really know. All we've got was an 85th minute appearance against Falkirk. He had a howler when they played Sligo Rovers in a friendly match. So we've got him to get rid of. Odin Thiago Holmes seems to be going to America, and we've already got three of Matt Lowell's star signings out on loan: Telio Kwon and Lager Bielke. The only one we really know of is Kwon, and he's making no impact whatsoever at Hibs. He'll see out his contract here, and I would be utterly amazed if he even gets 1 minute of action for Celtic. But we've still got a lot of players to get rid of, and just trust Rodgers and this new football doctor to bring in the players that he's looking for. The funds ought to be there. We know what our budget is. We know what we can afford in terms of transfer fee and wages. There must be plenty of players in that bracket, and we'll see if Michael Nicholson can get them over the line.
But just in terms of Kyogo, if he was to make that move, is the MLS really somewhere he'd want to go?
Yeah, why not? He's from Japan. He's 30, I think, next week. I would think in Japan you get plenty of American culture, and he's now in his third season of playing the Champions League at Celtic. He's won plenty at Celtic. He's got a place in the hearts, got a place in Celtic folklore. It's not going to be horrendous for him to stay around at Celtic for another season or two, but I can see plenty of appeal. There'll be a bit less pressure. The lifestyle, I think Giakoumakis loved the lifestyle out at Atlanta. So at the age of 30 and money, what was it? I was listening to Celtic Underground podcast a couple of weeks ago. Eddie Pearson is very good and very informed. And there's a decent pay rise in it for Kyogo. If there's a 10 million transfer fee for Celtic, in financial terms, on the balance sheet, it suits everyone. So I'd be surprised. If Kyogo got offered a deal to go to the MLS on more wages than he's at Celtic, I'd be astonished if he says no to it. But I would hope if it's going to happen, it's at the end of the season rather than now. But it's a high benchmark to try and find someone of Kyogo levels to come in and continue where Celtic are, hopefully being involved in the Champions League playoffs for the round of 16, keep the momentum going and ready to hit the ground running for next season. So it's a delicate one. We can certainly do with bringing in a winger, and with the way we play, there's not room for another striker. If another big striker comes in, it's only a matter of time before Kyogo moves on.
Yeah. I suppose the reason I asked you that question about Kyogo is because, you know, in the summertime, there was supposedly interest from City. And then you move from City to Atlanta in the MLS. And, like, for somebody like Kyogo, that interest from City would be flattering. It wouldn't be so flattering from an MLS side. So I was kind of curious to get your input on whether you think that would be a good move for him. But look, you spelled it out there, and what you say makes sense, you know, in terms of earnings and in terms of what kind of impression Jacob Marcus has of it. So, how about you, James? Have you anything further to add in terms of, like, it has been a very quiet window so far?
I'll touch again on Kyogo briefly. Joe's 100% right on the attractiveness of the move. I don't see any downside for Kyogo if an offer comes in that Celtic think is acceptable and they present it to him. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't go. Because in terms of a lifestyle upgrade, it would be significant. And they've already, of course, they signed a Japanese player last week, which is what sparked all this madness. Just not the Japanese player that the MLS League announced that they'd signed. So I can see completely why it would be a good move for him, and I can see why he would go. I just cannot see any circumstances under which we'll sell him in this window without buying a replacement first. And it's not even a case of, like, what we appear to be doing right now in terms of the winger. We'll let Lewis Palmer go. We'll try and find, maybe we'll try and find a deal for Yang, and then we'll bring someone in. You cannot sell Kyogo without his replacement already being in the building. That will just not wash at all. Fans will not enjoy that at all. So there's just no way to sell that to the Celtic supporters as anything other than a crazy, insane risk. So more likely in the summer, I think completely impossible to imagine in this window unless we make the striker signing first. But in those circumstances, if we do, as I said earlier, not only can I see the logic in it from his point of view, I could probably see the logic in it from others as well. I could probably see the idea behind it, especially if the player fits in it. What Rodgers wants to do here. Joe is also right that this is another window where we're still trying to clean up the mess from last summer.
Yeah.
And this must piss the club across the city off to quite a large degree. We spent a lot of money in that summer window, and almost all of it was wasted. And we did not miss a beat. The money that it cost us, we just wrote off in effect and just carried on. Rodgers got his two game-changing signings in the January window. We won the double, and this year, although it took us longer than it should have, and there was a lot of messing about, we got it done properly, and the results, you can now see them, and Rodgers is putting the last pieces of the jigsaw on. But Rodgers has had to clean up a hell of a mess from what happened in his first transfer window, none of which was his fault, excepting that he trusted those people to do the job right, and he let it happen. And if the guy's ever learned a lesson in his career, it'll be never to do that again. Never to let bean counters decide what his team was going to be and what signings he was going to get. But it's amazing to me that we've managed to get so many of the players at the door and just continue as we were before, whereas they, of course, are in a huge mess where they got rid of about five or six players in the summer and brought in a grand total of 800 grand in spite of all the lies they told about that. They've got even more dross to try and move on in January if they can. It doesn't sound as if they're going to get a lot of money for any of them. And they're just bleeding red ink. I don't think anything sums up the gulf between the two clubs more than that does. Even it's bigger even than the points gap. Well, that we can make such a colossal mess of a summer and still win things and then still be fixing it without missing a beat. And every single transfer window in the last X number of years has been revenue neutral, if not net positive, which is mental. It's absolutely mental.
One thing that actually probably does sum up the situation that they're in is they quite happily probably take several of the players that we bought in that transfer window to bolster their stuff.
I'll draw a line at that. I don't see Telio or Kwon Naroki. It's a decent throwaway line, but even that lot would draw the line at them. Between the two clubs, summer 2023 was utterly incredible. There's so much rubbish came to the city on long-term contracts, and we haven't received a penny for any of those players. We could probably get a fee for Palma, we could probably get a fee for Yang, but Telio, Lager, Bielke, and Kwon are out on loan. There's no prospect of getting anything back in them, and it'll just be a case of quietly taking them off, hoping they disappear, and not too much notice is made of them, like Albi and Ayeti, Barkas, and Ismail Asoro, Patrick something or other, the Polish guy. I was almost going to say Patrick Kleiber.
Still can't believe he made a profit on him.
No, James, that is without doubt spin. There is no way in this. We paid €4 million for Klamala. He did very, very little for us. And I know a former Celtic View reporter that put it out that we'd made a profit and there was all sorts of sell-ons. Klamala has since been to Israel, somewhere else, and he's now in Australia. And that's his levels. The American side did not pay more than €4 million for him. But
you know what something Klamala did for me? When we sold him, John Kennedy was asked about it. And John Kennedy praised him and said, he's a really good counter-attacking player, but we don't play that style. And I thought, who the fuck ever signed him in the first place? Knowing that we don't play that style. We've never played that style. So who the hell signed him? Who thought that was a good idea?
James, you know that answer. I know that answer. And Eric knows that answer.
We all know that answer.
And his son's just as useless.
Yeah. I had a look at the I had a look at the young winger that were like, I mean, I watched all his YouTube videos the other day, right? And I know you're not supposed to base anything on them, but I remember watching Kyogo's and thinking, right, his first touch is phenomenal, right? He knows where the net is. He can score from anywhere in the penalty area and outside it. The guy's got a high degree of technical skill. He'll be a star here, no question. I watched this guy the other day, and he reminds me a lot of Nicholas Kuhn and the way he moves and the way he runs with the ball at his feet and the way he likes to beat players and cut inside the penalty area and score goals and those little flicks over players' heads and all that that Nicholas Kuhn's quite famous for. It's so I can see where he fits the Rodgers style much better than someone like Yang. So I'm quite pleased about that. If that deal comes off, I'll be quite happy. It's a lot of money. I mean, we're talking about £6 million, £7 million, but we can afford it. We've got lots of money.
Yeah, I would say the Norwegian league and the Austrian leagues are fairly comparable. Austria's a little bit better, but if you Kuhn did it in Austria and he's transferred to Celtic and carried on there, and the Norwegian winger, if he's doing it, he's a couple of years younger, then he should be able to transfer that to Scotland. And you'd like to think with the new setup, the new sports doctor we've got in looking over everything, that there shouldn't be any more horrendous mismatches, no more Poland goalies and the rest of them.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, we definitely don't need another balling goalie. Okay, guys, that pretty much wraps up the transfer window thus far. Hopefully, we'll have some more to talk about with regard to that by next week, because I suppose when we look at next week's pod, we're coming towards the end of it, so we'd want to have some action at that point in time. But we'll do our usual finish up to this week's podcast, and we will put a vote on who the Ibrox twat of the week is. And there is plenty to pick at there this week. So I'll start with you, James. Who would you say is the twat of the week?
Keith Jackson, without a shadow of a doubt. His article today was mind-numbing. Absolutely mind-numbing. Like a petulant child not getting his way. It was like, why didn't he tell us some good news? That was terrible. He sat there and said nothing that was positive at all. Absolutely ridiculous. A mainstream journalist actually wrote that. An article that could have came from the Union Brat's own forum. Absolutely mental.
You could have seen it in follow.
Incredible stuff.
Yeah. How about you, Joe?
Well, James, as we touched on in text messages last week, Keith Jackson produces for his audience. His audience would have thought that was fantastic. So
that was absolute vintage stuff.
That was. My twat of the week, I'm giving it to the Rangers Review. Yesterday, they came up with a follow-up to the Malik Tillman moonbeam.
I wrote about that today. Oh, my God.
They've got £3.5 million coming their way from Malik Tillman's. Malik Tillman played about 20, 25 games under Van Bronckhorst and Beal alongside Haddies like John Lundstrom, Brian Jack, and whoever else was filling up the midfield at the time. So it's beyond belief. I have never, ever, ever heard any such deal structured that way.
Never, ever, ever, ever in the history of football.
And bizarrely, I think Ross Wilson deserves the credit for that deal. By having carried off that deal, they didn't do anything similar for Abdallah Seema from Brighton or for Vaclav Cherny from Wolfsburg. Mm. Absolutely straight, bizarre. After coming across that unique transfer system, that incredible setup that just means money pours in non-stop for the rest of time for taking a guy on loan. They never repeated it for subsequent loan transfers. So Tillman did not want to go anywhere near them again.
They gave numerous interviews to that end. Had no interest whatsoever in signing for them.
So you don't want to tell your audience that that guy Tillman really hated it here. He's glad to be away. This is the last place on earth he's coming back to. So the Rangers Review was first with the story, and they just went completely over the top. So Bayern Munich paid them to take Malik Tillman on loan, and it's such a place for grooming stars. So they get a fee for taking him on loan, and then they get a cut of his transfer from Bayern Munich to PSV Eindhoven. And yesterday, the Rangers Review, a desperate bid for some good news, informed the readers that there's also another windfall on their way from Tillman getting sold from PSV to Bayern Munich. So next year will be another installment of this wacky story. It's good to bring something a wee bit off the beaten track away from Barry Ferguson, Keith Jackson, Hugh Keevans, Chris Boyd. So I'll give my twat of the week to Johnny McFarlane and the
Rangers Review for bringing that one. Because I think that I thought that the original, as I said in the piece I put up today, I thought the original version of that story was easily the stupidest, most transparently fictitious series of events I had ever read being promoted by the Scottish Sporting Press, except maybe for the non-death of Rangers. The idea that they will make more money from that deal in the end than they would even have had to pay had they exercised the option is fucking nuts. It's off the charts nuts. Anyone who believes that should be fitted for a padded cell. It's mental. It's absolutely
mental. We are the people.
Socks the intelligence of every person who read it.
World's most successful club, James.
Was. Not anymore. What was I saying? My twat of the week. I think Chris Boyd, because his meltdown on Saturday was pretty awesome, I have to admit. Between Rangers being broken and his whole tantrum over the Alistair Johnston, you know, the foul, and trying to say that was a red card and losing the plot over that. It's great to see the guy's pain at the moment. He's completely melting down, you know. And what's even more amusing is to watch Chris Sutton's reactions. You know, it's so funny. And it's like shooting fish in a barrel for Sutton, really, because he just sits there and he laps it up and he watches by losing the plot. And it's just makes for great viewing when you're a Celtic fan anyway, that's for sure.
That's definitely. I'm told that if we nominate him, we have to nominate Neil McCann as well, because I haven't actually saw Neil McCann's meltdown about it.
Oh, after his BBC.
He was on a similar level.
Yeah. He was. That was a very harsh question, wasn't that? Wasn't that the reaction that he gave when he was asked about Philippe Clement? Yeah. There's an amount of twats there this week that we could be choosing from, and I think it's going to keep going that way, the way things have been going. So look, guys, that wraps us up for this week. It's been a fairly good one, in fairness, when we look at what's been going on across the fence. But folks, if you enjoy it, like, share and subscribe, and keep them coming, and we'll keep them coming. And we'll all look forward to coming back to you next week, where Joe will be presenting, and we'll have plenty of on-topic discussions again, and no doubt a good look over the fence. Until then, folks, we'll talk to you, and take it easy. Have a good one.
Cheers.
See you guys. Bye-bye. Cheers.